300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams. We are on the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. Thanks for joining us. I am Harvey Wasserman. We're joined by two spectacular guests. My co-conspirator for so many years, Bob Petrakis, the lead litigant, the plaintiff in the now landmark Petrakis versus Husted lawsuit. And we also are joined by Sheila Parks, founder of the Center for Hand-Counted Paper Ballots. Bob, are you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
And Sheila, where are you?
I'm here, Harvey, and Bob, too. Hi.
Okay, great. And Sheila, I assume you're in Boston. And Bob, you're with us here in Columbus, Ohio, as am I. I want to make a quick mention of, we're going to talk about election protection again. We're still cleaning up the wreckage or the aftermath or the generally favorable results of the, at least favorable for us, of the this recent election. We got a lot of lessons to learn before people get too complacent and learn and leave behind what people need to know. I do want to make mention of something that happened in this election, which I think is absolutely spectacular, which is that we have two states, the first two governments in the world to step forward and legalize marijuana, Colorado and Washington. I've read both propositions from the ballot. They are slightly different. Colorado actually took the step of legalizing hemp, which is not mentioned in the Washington state referendum issue. And the legalization of hemp, I think, is a huge deal in the long term, maybe more economically important, actually, than the legalization of marijuana. But we do have two governments now, two states of the United States, where you can legally walk around if you are 21 and smoke pot, for God's sakes. And, you know, people kind of smirk at it. It's not a big deal. It is a huge deal. Some people view it as not a big deal, but I think it's a tremendous deal. And I don't even smoke it because basically it's a civil liberties issue. You got 10% of this country at least regularly using marijuana. They've been arresting people all over the country for this medicinal herb, basically, which may help cure cancer, certainly helps cure glaucoma and a number of other ailments. So I want to lead, since we're going to talk about election protection and this recent election, I want to lead off with that. I actually think in the long term that may be as significant a turning point in our history as anything else that's come out of this election. Bob and Sheila, do you want to chime in on that?
Bob, am I crossing across you? I can hardly hear, even though I'm in my cell. I'm thrilled that they passed two for every reason. I don't do marijuana anymore in any way, but that's why I thought I would pass. But I am really thrilled that it's passed and feel like there are a lot of good things that will pass this time. I mean, the first openly gay woman, lesbian woman, you know, in the Congress in
Wisconsin.
But anyway, I'm staying with the marijuana. It's really great that it happened in such a backward country as ours.
Bob, you want to? I know that you, of course, never.
I really see it as a political watershed. I got my start in politics working in Ann Arbor when I was in college for the decriminalization, the famed $5 civil fine if it was an ounce or less. And the reality, I mean, was that marijuana was targeted, particularly during the Reagan years. It was politically motivated to attack the counterculture in all it stood for, which included, of course, sustainable economics and the green movement. And it was absurd. The war on drug led us, of course, to arrest 800,000 people a year and wreck lives and deny them education. So I see it as, you know, the final vindication. I mean, and really what it came down to is, I know the GI generation preferred alcohol, and those in the counterculture, beginning with our great founders in the Beat movement, preferred marijuana on occasion. And it really is a monumental shift. And it will go a long way to making us have less people in the prison-industrial complex, which is works hand in glove with the military-industrial complex and the security-industrial complex. And a lot of those same players, like Booz Allen Hamilton, the Carlton Group, end up inevitably in the voting machine business as well, because it's all part of an oppressive apparatus that used to rig elections overseas and through COINTELPRO and MH Chaos used to oppress people's movements worldwide as well as in the United States. So it's really a great victory and indicates a complete shift in generational attitudes towards really oppressive political policies.
Right. Of course, now Booz Allen.
If you're going to change the subject, are you?
No, no. I want to talk about this a little more, if you don't mind. Sheila, are you okay on your cell phone there?
I am. And when you finish, I want to add something, too.
Oh, good. Please, go ahead.
Okay, so I really wanted to just elaborate a little bit on what Bob said, too, that it's the whole war on drugs that has to be stopped, not just the war on marijuana. And, you know, they kind of passed it because it was medical marijuana, which is a really good beginning. But the war on drugs means a war against all people of color. And you know, as Michelle Alexander talks about so eloquently in her book, The New Jim Crow, so it's got to be stopped. And there are groups that are working to stop that. And we just need to do that. I was so surprised that they didn't rig those two elections. Maybe they were too busy doing something else. But here in Massachusetts, which is so a Catholic state, they did not pass, we did not pass, the right to die law, which would have meant if you wanted to, you know, die, you could die and your physician would help you. And that is so tied in with the medical marijuana law. So you can see how Massachusetts is so far behind anything like that.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I was also shocked to see that California turned down the abolition of the death penalty. I mean, I thought that would be a no-brainer, and it actually failed by a fairly substantial margin. I was quite shocked to see that. But I do want to stick with marijuana here for a little bit because, as I say, I think it's the watershed issue. And Bob and I, of course, as have you, Sheila, have been working on election protection for so long now. And this is, as you say, I mean, they were too busy to rig these votes in Colorado and in Washington. But because there was a lot going on. You mentioned, for example, the victory of Tammy Baldwin, the first openly gay. And when we have to say openly gay. We have had a gay president of the United States, by the way. His name was James Buchanan. He's the guy who came just before Abraham Lincoln. We'll go off on that tangent a little later.
Out lesbian, Harvey.
What's that?
She got elected as an out lesbian, and that's the difference.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct, and very clear about it. I actually saw Tammy Baldwin's acceptance speech, and it was very interesting because she stood there like a politician and gave a fairly standard thank you speech, very gracious, very intelligent, and then she mentioned that she would be the first openly gay U.S. senator, and people cheered everybody was very happy, and then she just went on with her speech. It was like, okay, that's taken care of, and now let's get back to business. But let's talk about marijuana some more, because it is, of course, part of the whole election protection deal. I think that they would have stolen it if they could have, but we had ways in both Colorado and in Washington and around the country to deal with this. But, Bob, I just read a piece online how just with the decriminalization of marijuana in California, there was a huge drop in the arrest of young people, a very substantial number. And now we're looking, I believe, and I love your opinion on this, that in Ohio and other states around the country, there will be a huge flood of legalization issues. What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, no, I think you're right, and Sheila touches on a key point with a lot of this war really was staged against people of color, and I say this as a licensed attorney in Ohio, where, again, out in the suburbs in what they call Mayor's Court and Hilliard and Grandview, a young white teenager who could afford an attorney such as myself, usually those charges would be dropped down to disorderly conduct. There would be no record, but often if you didn't have enough money and you were poor and lived in the inner city and you were a minority, you would end up being tracked out within the system and you'd end up getting busted for pot or some other small amount of drugs, and that really tracked you the rest of your life and opened you to police raids and treatment that you would never get for doing the exact same thing if you were a white, affluent, suburban teenager heading off to college.
Right, and you know, the war on drugs really has been such a war on people of color and also on young people. I mean, the origin of the war on drugs in 1970 with Richard Nixon was really just because he hated hippies. Of course, hippies hated him, and the way to get at hippies and the way to get at black voters and Hispanics was to make drugs illegal. And also
take their vote away, Harvey, right? I mean, that's the key thing. About 9% of African-American males can't vote in this country, and it's overwhelmingly the war on drug that has disenfranchised them, many who have served their time in some of these southern states.
Well, Sheila Parks, you have mentioned this as a disenfranchisement strategy. Is it safe to say, and I mean, I'm just feeling my way through this here because it's, I want to emphasize the power of this. Washington, the state of Washington and the state of Colorado are the first two governments in the entire world to legalize marijuana. I mean, this is a big deal. Ecuador, Peru, Paraguay have both been talking about it. There's Mexico, there's been discussion of it, although I just read today that they say that the public opinion polls in Mexico are overwhelmingly against legalizing marijuana. I find it hard to believe. But we know that in the United States, a significant majority of this country is in favor of legalizing marijuana. And Sheila Parks, as an expert in voting, what do you think the implications will be for the electorate if the war on drugs is drawn to a close?
Well, I think it's going to become like Proposition 37 in California and Proposition 8 in California. And I know we're going to get back to that. But I don't know, and I wonder if either you or Bob know, what they did in those two states to get this law passed, because I am shocked. I'm shocked and thrilled and delighted and surprised, but I can't believe it. Because remember, I said, we are in such a backward country now with the hard right doing so much ruling of all of this stuff that it's pretty interesting to me. And it's the whole war on drugs. You know, Bob and I are both saying that. Bob, the whole time you were talking, I was just sitting here nodding my head up and down, saying it's the war on drugs that has to be addressed, not only this medical marijuana thing. And I think that we really, really have to make sure that every time we talk about medical marijuana, we talk about the war on drugs on people of color, and that we're not just so centered on the medical marijuana. And I the election. I'm sorry, Harvey?
Well, what makes this these propositions in Colorado and Washington State so radical is that it's not medical marijuana. These are actual full-on legalization for anyone over 21. I don't know.
Oh my God.
This is not medical marijuana now. We have 18 states in the District of Columbia. In other words, we're getting to half of the states that have legalized medical marijuana. But the law in both Colorado and Washington State now says if you are over 21, you can have, I don't remember what the quantity is, but you can have a significant amount of pot, and it's legal. Now, you can't, both of them have prohibitions on driving under the influence of marijuana. And I think, I've always joked that if marijuana is legal, they'll have to raise the speed limit. I mean, people who drive on marijuana tend to drive really slow. And so it is illegal to drive under the influence. I think it's similar to a DUI law on alcohol. And I support that, and it also there are restrictions on being 21, under 21 and having marijuana. And there are also restrictions, I believe, on having it on school property. But other than that, it's just flat out legal. Bob, are you familiar with the details of the laws?
I know one of the states, the magic number was an ounce, which is often used in these laws. That's considered to be personal use, but like everyone else, I mean, the assumption these were really low key. I mean, I'm the attorney for the medical marijuana people in Ohio, and no one was talking about these things passing. So on many levels, I'm stunned. But for a long period of time, the data has indicated the majority of Americans are in favor of legalization, particularly if it's associated with regulation and tax. So these were just flying around under the radar there, and there wasn't much talk, and suddenly they pass in both states, which may be an indication, I think, of an honest count for once.
Yeah. Now, how did that happen? I mean, you would think that they would be that the powers that be, the Karl Rove machine, would want to steal these two. I think that they passed probably by a higher percentage than was stealable. I think what's going to happen now is the Rove machine, these guys just don't care that much about medical marijuana or marijuana itself in general anymore. I guess we're going to see. But Sheila, go ahead. Sheila Parks?
You know, that's what I was thinking, too, that there, you know, it isn't like the money involved in Monsanto and why they would go against, you know, the Proposition 37. But what did they gain or lose by having this pass? Probably nothing, except that the drug lords aren't going to make so much money anymore by selling illegal marijuana.
Well, but it does have, as you've mentioned, it does have implications for our democracy. I mean, if they're not going to be, if the drug war is going to start to wind down, we're not going to have as many people of color who are disenfranchised.
I mean, this is a white drug, Javi. Marijuana, at least last I knew, was a white skin privileged drug.
I don't know about that.
You're still going to go to prison for that. Bob, can you help?
Bob, you're an attorney in the trenches. What do you think about the racial implications of marijuana?
Well, there was, I'm one of the guys who's on record saying that Snoop Doggy Dogg did more to save the American inner city than any man on earth, because of the assaults during the Reagan era. I mean, the price of marijuana, was the same as gold during the 1980s, and the price of crack had dropped to $3 a hit at one point, making it, in some cases, the drug of first choice. But you remember when Snoop Dogg was on the Chronic and broke loose there with Dre as a rap artist and brought marijuana back somewhat within the inner city. But clearly, having lived in the inner city in that period in Detroit and also since then on the Near East Side of Columbus, one of the things is there was far less violent associated with smoking marijuana. So there was an uptick within the inner city, but Sheila's right, is that overwhelmingly all drugs are overwhelmingly and disproportionately done by white suburbanites. They've just always allowed the open markets to be in the inner city areas because they won't tolerate them in the suburbs on the street corners where disproportionately not only more pot is smoked, but more crack is consumed and more cocaine and other drugs.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and of course, cutting to the core of our social problems in this country, this is a big deal. I mean, Snoop Dogg was a big promoter of pot. Bob Marley, of course, big promoter of pot and not of hard drugs at all. And I always thought that this whole idea that marijuana led to harder drugs was utter nonsense, except that because it was illegal. And the only reason that marijuana would ever lead to harder drugs was because the drug dealers were selling it.
And right, and really that's what they did in Holland. They pulled apart those markets, and shockingly they find people who smoke pot are very laid back and content with smoking pot.
Yeah, right. I mean, who can get it together, get enough money if you're smoking pot to do anything else anyway? I mean, so now here, Sheila, you're in a state, medical marijuana is legal in Massachusetts, is that correct?
Bobby, I absolutely don't know.
No.
I'm embarrassed to admit I don't know.
Oh, okay. I'll look
so.
It up on the internet while we talk.
Bobby.
Bob, Ohio does not have medical marijuana, but we do have a very large quantity of pot that's legal to carry, or that's a misdemeanor. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, you're really talking about a 6 ounces or so. You have to be over for it to be a felony. They're essentially making it a misdemeanor for what clearly are the stashes of small-time drug dealers. So. It is very, very progressive, Ohio, and it has a very high standard by targeting really the sellers and not the small-time dealers and people who are just growing a few plants.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy. I actually met the guy who drafted. He was a kind of a member of the ruling class. He comes from the Wolf family, which is a very powerful family in central Ohio. And I guess the legislators, when it came time to draw up the law on marijuana, and went to him because they knew he knew about it. And he told them, they asked him what quantity should be illegal. And I think he said something like, was it 100 grams, 1,000 grams? I can't remember, but it was a large number. And they just went, since he put it in grams, they didn't know what he was talking about. And it turns out to be like 6 ounces that you can have in Ohio. Well, now the question is, what's going to happen next, with the marijuana laws? Will other states jump in 2014? And follow the lead of Washington and Colorado to legalize pot? Bob, what do you think will happen here in Ohio?
Can I just say one thing?
Yes, please.
Because I Googled it. And, you know, I'm so crazy. I voted for it myself, but then it did pass. Massachusetts now has medical marijuana. We passed it this, November 6th.
Oh, on this particular vote, this year?
Yeah, I know. What I'm saying is you asked me, and I said I didn't know, and I'm laughing because I voted for it, of course, and we did pass it.
Well, that's what happens to you with the medical marijuana. You lose your short-term memory. What can I tell you? I'm not okay. Sheila, you're in Massachusetts. Do you think that it's likely that in the next election, the state of Massachusetts will vote for fully legalizing?
I don't know, Javi, because I don't know anything about the history of this in any of the states, how long it took. But I think in Massachusetts it took a long time for what I'm Googled here, because they said they finally passed it. And so whoever's working on this stuff is doing great work. And I was what I said before. I don't know whether it's slipping it under the radar, or all these people in Washington also do drugs. I'm just going to assume and trust that. So they want it passed, too, although certainly nothing happens to them when they do drugs. So it looks like that's, how the LGBTQ thing, was the only movement really in the last few years that was making progress and everything else was going backwards. It looks like the medical marijuana thing is on a fast track, which is, and hopefully to all marijuana, medical or not, is happening. Say yes.
Yes, I think we'll get to actual election protection in the second half hour here. But Bob, as you're one of the leaders of the medical marijuana movement here in Ohio, what do you think is going to happen in the next election now that it's legal in Washington and Colorado?
Well, it will inevitably spread, and I think the tax revenue alone is irresistible to the states, and particularly the environmental impact of hemp. As a congressional candidate, Green Party candidate, I gave this speech on legalizing hemp at the Farm Bureau, and it was very warmly received. It set them on fire, so to speak. I mean, they were very receptive and understand the absurdity. You know, it's a bit like outlawing, you know, corn production because you can make moonshine out of it.
Well, there's an idea. That's a good point. Never thought of it that way. Well, what's your prediction, Bob? We don't have medical marijuana. It's never been on the ballot here in Ohio. What do you think is going to happen in 2014? Will we get medical marijuana on the ballot? Will we get full legalization? What's your crystal ball there?
Well, Ohio's one of those states that's always about 24th to 48th in positive reform. What you'll get is medical marijuana in 2014. You're not going to get you know, the legalization of marijuana, in part because the laws are real lenient in terms of total amount. But Ohio usually is never in the forefront, meaning the first half of states to pass any reform. But I think we'll pass medical marijuana in 2014. Michigan already is the first state in the Midwest that has done that.
And how successful is medical marijuana in Michigan? What's happening with it up there?
Well, it's really not controversial. It's the interesting thing, of course, is the law up there provides that it's really small growers that provide it. And quite frankly, there's a whole lot of people that have moved back into Detroit because 30% of the city is now uninhabited and are actually growing, marijuana within the city to provide for the need in that state. So it's almost a designated and accepted zone, and really the police have much bigger problems to deal there and whether or not you even have your license up to date. But there's been, I'm up there constantly. My mom lives up there. My family, my brothers and sisters are up there. And quite frankly, I mean, two members in my family had access to medical marijuana, one who's a disabled police officer and the other one that's was in an accident and is disabled as well. And, you know, they don't abuse it, and, you know, they don't let their kids smoke it. And it works fine. It's regulated. It's taxed. It really hasn't changed anything other than ripping it out of kind of a brutal criminal black market.
Well, yeah, we're on with Bob Fitrakis, the lead plaintiff in the now landmark Fitrakis versus Houston lawsuit, which we'll talk about in the second half hour, and Sheila Park, editor of, rather the author. And what's the title of your book, Sheila?
Okay, my name has an S on the end of it, two parts. But the name of my book is While We Still Have Time. I'll give you the whole title, The Perils of Electronic Voting Machines and Democracy Solution, Publicly Observed Secure Hand-Counted Paper Ballots Elections.
Yes, and
you are the founder of the Center for Hand-Counted Paper Ballots.
Very good, and you're talking to us from Boston. In the second half hour, we'll be joined by Cliff Arnebeck, one of the attorneys involved with the Fitrakis versus Houston lawsuit, and we'll get down to the nitty-gritty here of election protection after this great election. We'll take a break, and we will be right back on the Solartopian Green Power and Wellness Show.
All my friends will the low rider. The low rider is a little higher.
I'm Gary Knoll. and I'd like to invite you to a special premiere for this audience on December 6th, Thursday evening, 7 o'clock, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan at a major movie theater for GMOs, The Toxic Time Bomb. This documentary tells you the whole truth about GMOs, the bad science, the fraudulent science, the people who go from Monsanto to the FDA and other agencies like the USDA, who then tell us that GMOs are fine and safe. They are not. Please support this film. Call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422 to sign up to be there. So it's a $30 evening. All net proceeds will go to a nonprofit charity that feeds homeless veterans and others in Central Florida called The Daily Bread. And you're going to also receive a wonderful hardback book, Living in the Moment, Prescription for the Soul, $25 value for free. And you're going to receive a copy of the film itself when you leave for free. Let's support the labeling of GMOs. Let's understand what GMOs are. Let's learn the full truth. Join me, please, on December 6th, Thursday evening, at 7 p.m. on the Upper West Side, 646-926-5422. You can also go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com. And sign up over the internet. We look forward to seeing you there. Thank you very much.
Progressive Radio Network is extremely proud to announce the official PRN mobile app. Keep up with the Progressive Radio Network on the go, whenever and wherever, 24-7, with one-touch access to listen live, archives and podcasts of our latest shows, health, politics, and environmental news, featured op-eds, videos, and click to call us with just one touch. Plus, keep in touch with all our hosts via Twitter and Facebook. Download the app for free at prn.fm/mobile and keep moving forward with us.
This is PRN.FM.
PRN.FM.
The number one station for progressive minds.
Progressive minds.
Back now at the Soratopia Green Power Wellness Show, talking with Bob Fitrakis here in Columbus, Ohio, my longtime co-conspirator and the lead plaintiff in the landmark Fitrakis versus Houston lawsuit. Cliff Arnebeck, attorney in that case, has joined us. Cliff, are you there?
I'm here, Harvey.
Okay, good. And we have Sheila Parks. Yeah, Cliff, we'll get back to this in a minute. In a bit. I want to talk to Sheila Parks, founder of the Center for Hand Counted Paper Ballots. Sheila, we spent the first half hour talking about the landmark change in the marijuana laws in Colorado and Washington State, where marijuana is now legal, for God's sakes. But we want to ask you, as a longtime campaigner on election protection, what do you believe has been the impact of the movement on this 2012 election, and where does the movement for election protection need to go?
Is that all you want to know? I want to talk about California, because Proposition 37 looks to me like, you know, like the big corporations are really threatened in their pocketbooks, which is all they care about. They will come and rig and do anything they possibly can to stop anything that we the people want to do that really is mandatory for our health. I mean, there's just not even talk worth talking about. Should the food we eat be labeled or not? Yeah, it needs to be labeled. But the question I really want to ask before that and say about that, because I think it affects everything future, and I am, you know, I was involved with GMO 1,000 years ago when we started with the stuff in the milk, the bovine growth hormone in milk, was the first beginning of when the public really became aware of that. So I am on the list of all of the organizations that were working in California for Proposition 37 to get all of our food labeled GMO or not. And not one of those organizations ever mentioned the possibility that this election on Proposition 37 would be rigged because of the electronic voting machines. And I don't know if anybody else is, you know, Bob or Cliff or you, Harvey, got any notification of that. All I got was every single day, more money, more money, more money, more money. Please send money to help with these ads. And I thought that was pretty naive and crazy-making for all of those groups not to have something going on about the rigging of the elections. And Ronnie Cummins, of all people, was present at a workshop in Wisconsin that Victoria Collier, John Simon, and I did about rigging of machines, and we really brought up the whole thing of, you know, there was Ronnie in the room. So it was very surprising and really sad and tragic to me that Proposition 37 is probably not going to be passed and that the organizations didn't mention it. So it feels to me that for the future, first of all, we have to have Cliff Arnebeck clone himself and go to every state so you can file lawsuits, and Bob, you clone yourself so you can be the...
I think they're working on that now, actually.
That's because, of course... Well, anyhow, I have, that's another question. Did you have standing because you were a Green Party candidate, or could you file? I mean, one of the things I read said just as a voter, because when we were trying to file in Mass about an injunction, it was unclear if we had standing or not. But the point being that also, unless everybody is keenly aware that these elections can be and are and will be and have been rigged by the electronic voting machines, 212 is not going to happen again. It's not going to happen again. We have to double and triple every single thing we did for those elections, watching and videoing and making sure everybody knew. But then we have to do it for every single thing, and we have to work so that there are no more electronic voting machines in this country anywhere, both touch screens and optical scans.
Well, my understanding, Sheila and Bob, or Cliff, you can jump in on this, is that the results in California are actually not yet in, that there's still many, many thousands of provisional ballots and other irregularities in the vote count in California that have not been resolved. Cliff and Bob, have you been following that at all?
I have a little. I've been in touch regularly with Lori Grace, and I'd actually talked to Ronnie right before the vote, and you know, I was urging, as Sheila was, that you know, that they watch what happens with the electronic votes, because a few years back they were really convinced, and they had exit polls to prove it, that it looked like the gay marriage amendment had been tampered with in California. So, you know, I'm with Sheila, and I'd be willing to be cloned as long as it was, you know, proper labeling that it's my clone out there.
and as long as it's not genetically modified.
I think people got to get more aggressive, and I think Sheila's right, and we should move to hand-counted paper ballots, and as that transition comes, we should be using the open source, the Trackenberg system with the paper. We should move to immediate transition as quickly as possible to hand-counted paper ballots. And we should not allow any area to vote simply on an e-voting machine.
So the question now is, and I've...
I mean, the same way with no nukes, never, ever, ever has to be, no hand counted paper, no electronic voting machines, ever, ever, never, anywhere, ever.
Well, this is something that's, you know, going to emerge hopefully in the next few years. What I'm finding, of course, is that the election protection movement, and Bob and Cliff and Sheila, jump in and correct me if you think I'm wrong. The election protection movement won a huge victory this year in that the whole world really watched with horror about the disenfranchisement, the upfront Jim and Juanita Crow movement by the Republicans to disenfranchise as many people as possible. It was, suspected Democrats, of course, Hispanics, African Americans, young people, and they did this state by state and in a national national basis as best they could. And the New York Times actually came out and said, hey, the Republicans are trying to disenfranchise people. This was an open secret. Everybody understood this. But simultaneously, none of the corporate media and much of the left, none of them were willing to deal with the issue of electronic voting. It's astounding to me.
Actually, Harvey, I would think there was actually a huge breakthrough on Wall Street. Business Insider, Investment Daily News, and Forbes, with two different writers and three articles, we seem to be able to convince Forbes magazine that the technology is shaky and unreliable. But we convinced Forbes before we convinced the New York Times, the Washington Post, The Nation, and Mother Jones. And we're often openly attacked by groups like Think Progress. And to me, that's a political agenda. Those groups know exactly what's happening.
Why do you think the left is unwilling to face electronic voting machines?
Well, no, I think it's because they have a line that if they admit the machines are rigged, it'll hurt their ground game. They've committed to the fact that they have to go out, you know, and literally win by 10 points to win by 3.
Sheila Parks, what do you think about that?
Javi, you're asking me, look, Alton, Steve Rosenfeld wrote from Alton that the electronic voting machines didn't matter. And I have a list of people on the left that I know personally over many years that I have talked with about electronic voting machines, and they have a tone deaf ear, including the late, great Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, and Jill Stein, who I also know for many years, wouldn't hear a word that I said to her about electronic voting machines probably for 10 years. And maybe it was all of you people, Ben Mansky, who's forehand counting, and Harvey and Bob, but Jill wouldn't listen, and there's a long list. I'll refrain from naming them. It seems to me that somehow the racism and the disenfranchisement of so many people of color reached the mainstream more than the left, as it did, as high as Bob just said. But there's something else I want to add to that, because, you know, racism and sexism, misogyny, are always in some kind of dead heat with each other, of everybody being oppressed, or people saying, no, the racism is worse, no, the sexism, misogyny is worse. And I'm so sick and tired of people trying to, you know, say my oppression is worse than your oppression. But what happened, as I looked at it, was that the disenfranchisement, which was happening, you know, as people couldn't vote, as people of color couldn't vote, as they were taken from the rolls for the being a felon, being a convicted felon, and all of the stuff that the Republicans were doing. Whereas the women thing happens after the vote, after these high right Republicans got in, all those 10 right-wing governors, the women stuff started, all the stuff against our health care, against reproductive rights, all the things against women. And so people were, and that was the machine stuff, people were paying less attention to the after oppression of women than the before oppression of people of color, if you can follow what I'm saying.
Yeah. I do want to say I spent a fair amount of time in a couple of cases with Jill Stein in this past campaign. I do think she certainly came around on electronic voting. I think she understood.
Oh, I totally agree. She has finally done it.
Yeah,
yes,
and
no,
she was
thrilled.
A great candidate, by the way, Jill Stein. I was very happy to support her. Cliff Harnebeck, you're with us on electronic voting. What's your take on why the left and so much of the media seems to have such a blind eye on electronic voting machines?
Well, I think it's a carryover from the time when Rove was in the White House and using the power of his policy position there to silence the press in regard to criticizing the 2004 election fraud that was rather obvious. And he used the Iraq War and the idea that we have a wartime president and you can't attack his integrity. And if you're suggesting he didn't win the election by some kind of massive fraud, that's what you're doing, is attacking the integrity of the president. So Rove's no longer in the White House. And yet the power vacuum has continued. People have just stayed away from this, and the vacuum has been filled by the free press, and I mean the free press of Columbus, Ohio.
Freepress.org.
Exactly. Bob Fetrakis and Harvey Wasserman and Jerry Bello have filled the vacuum. You are now the free. You are now the mainstream media, at least with respect to this issue. And I think the what comes through the article to me on the article from Forbes, the TV broadcast from Fox News in Cincinnati, is not so much that this issue is real and so on. It's that the free press is the sole organization, the sole media outlet that has broken the story. And so you've filled the vacuum, and by doing so, you've become the mainstream media on this issue.
Well, here we are at PRN. They've done their job, too, carrying these shows on electronic voting machines. So, you know, Cliff and Bob and Sheila, the question now is, what do we do? You know, after the 2000 election, there was, you know, an uproar about, to a certain extent, about all the irregularities and difficulties, and a 36-day hiatus to find out who actually won, and then, of course, the loser was put in the White House. But it actually got worse. After the situation with vote theft got worse after the 2000 election. We had HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, which proliferated these horrific electronic voting machines and walked right into another stolen election in 2004. So, you know, here, of course, Obama has won re-election. But the question now is, we're starting to see solutions, so-called solutions that are going to make things even worse, like convenience voting, you know, voting by mail and by email. How do we prevent ourselves from going into an even worse situation in 2016?
And talking about absentee ballots, which is one of the
absentee
ways.
Yeah, absentee ballots, all that stuff. I mean, Sheila, what do you change?
I want to answer that, but I just want to say, I think that that Jerry Bello and Harvey Wasserman and Bob Petraeus, that you did the most spectacular, fabulous, wonderful, incredible jobs with all that research you had done. Just stunning. And I was always sitting here saying, how could I do it so fast? But I don't think, Cliff, that they're the only ones that, you know, broke the news all over Facebook and all over the other, you know, the Facebook pages and our own Facebook pages and groups pages. People were writing and spreading what they had done. So I don't think it's only that they broke the news. I think that they did the research, which was absolutely crucial, brilliant, and wonderful. And I congratulate you, and I wish you would add some women to your research team. But I think that, you know, that the solution, that the reason the electronic voting machines are here, too, for as far as I'm concerned, because people can make so much money on them. And they make the money not only selling them, but the John Washburn tells me that most of the money is made on the maintenance and the upgrading and the store,
sure.
That's how they make the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part is that they can rig the elections. You know, I think Harper was a well thought out plan to rig our elections, and they're really doing that very well. So I think the way that we have to go is to convince the public. Clearly the voters got it. Latinas, African Americans, women, youth, LGBTQ. We came out in droves because we knew that's what we had to do to protect our lives. And I do have a question I just want to throw into the pot. In the mainstream, white men voted for Romney more than any other group. And I'm wondering if that was true for people who voted for the Greens. And I love Jill Stein. I don't mean to put her down. I love her, although it took her a long time to get in counting. But I did vote for Obama because I wanted to make sure that Romney couldn't do anything about all of those groups that I talked about to kill us off. So I wonder if any of you know what the demographics were, whether men, white men or women, voted more for the Greens than for Obama.
Well,
so
Bob,
we have to just keep on screaming about hand-counted paper ballots to every single soul on this planet. It is always the people that have gotten these things changed, not the laws. The laws came after the people were out in the streets.
So, Bob Petraeus, where do we go next? Do you have an idea of the demographics of who voted Green?
I haven't seen a breakdown, but I do know this demographic we have in the free press. The people that Sheila referenced, the unsung heroes that tweeted in a few hours, sent the stuff that Jerry, you and I wrote out 20,000 times on Facebook, were overwhelmingly single women middle-aged living at home, which appear disproportionately were reading the Free Press. And the movement itself, of course, is always Bev Harris, who in many ways is the godmother of the movement, and Sheila Parks and Marta Steele, who have written these incredible books, and Victoria Colliers. The Free Press, in fact, we were funded by Lori Grace, who has her own Election Integrity Foundation, and, you know, we couldn't have done the research. So the movement itself, that is, in terms of our followers who really spread the stories, the 60,000 people that wrote the Justice Department and Holder on change.org were overwhelmingly women and well-educated women, I might add.
Right. I want to point out just as a way of passing also that that's also true of the anti-nuclear movement. The no nukes movement has, the mainstay of the no nukes movement has always been middle-aged, middle-class women who've given the, starting with Helen Caldicott, of course, who have given the movement its oomph. So, Bob and Cliff, Cliff, let's talk to you really quickly about the legal aspects. Sheila has given us some of the political aspects. What is the legal standing now of the Fatrakis versus Houston lawsuit, and where do we go on electronic voting machines legally?
Well, the Fatrakis versus Husted case at the state level is what is currently pending. We dismissed the federal case, and there's a tremendous potential.
Now, this, for our listeners who may not know, this is a lawsuit challenging a patch that was put on the electronic voting machines in Ohio. The suit was filed a day before the election, and it turns out, according to Bev Harris, there may be a similar patch is put on electronic voting machines in Michigan that we know of now.
Well, I think the potential for this suit is tremendous. Because and I think it was the Attorney General that brought it up, that we had talked about a racketeering suit, and we had talked about addressing a whole series of criminal acts that had been going on under the leadership of Karl Rove for many, many years all across the country. We have the potential to expand this suit to make the affixing of this illegal patch in the 2012 election as the most current corrupt act in a long pattern of corrupt activity, and I'm hoping that's what will develop.
Bob Fatrakis is the plaintiff in this case. What do you got to add to that?
Well, no, it's I hope we can fulfill sort of Sheila's dream there and take this all over the country to where these corrupt practices, have been taking place, whether that's in Tampa, Florida, or Glen Allen, Virginia, where Seidel appeared to be part of this network, and maybe even to take a look at what happened out there in California, because I believe it's an integrated network, and I think that's why Sheila's book with her solution is so important. So I'm hoping she gets a chance to plug it again, because it's going to be key and important reading in the movement.
Well, Sheila Parks, tell us from Boston here about a bit more. We're getting close to being at the end of the hour. Your book and your work on hand-counted paper ballots, where is it going to lead us now?
I just want to say one thing. I think that Bob and Cliff doing these lawsuits against those machines, as they, you know, just did in Ohio, everywhere in the states that you possibly can, is really fabulous, wonderful, really. I just want to say, really go ahead on that. As far as the electronic voting machines, I think that the job is now to educate people, to tweet, to Facebook, to talk on radio shows like this, to write as much as we possibly can, to really say they have to be outlawed. Half measures avail us nothing. I don't want to go after just the touch screens, because that gives people the optical illusion that the optical scans are any good, and they're no good. They rig elections all over the place. Need a reminder of Volusia County, where they probably rigged and gave, you know, that election to Gore. To a Bush precinct 216. So it feels to me that a lot, I don't understand why people like Pamela Smith, whom I really know and respect, and when I call her up, she can answer any question I need to know. I still hung up on those machines, but I think we have to move ahead and move past them and talk with the people. The people get it. We, you know, the people really get it. And when I talk to normal, regular people, they understand the electronic voting machines are not good and not the way we should go. And to bring money into the community nowadays, to pay people to count when people are starving and really need money, that is just such an added thing that everybody should look at. We should keep on talking about it brings money into the community to have people hand count in that community.
That's a good point. And of course, now that Colorado has passed legalized hemp, we can have all these ballots printed up, hopefully, on hemp paper.
Yes.
Sheila Parks, founder of the Center for Hand-Counted Paper Ballots, it's very good to hear from you. We're running close to out of time. I want to sneak in a caller here, John from Ithaca. You want to pipe in, please, John?
Hi, Bob and Harvey and Sheila. I'm John Milich. I've been an election fraud activist for more than a dozen years, a journalist. I'd like to say and agree with you. I know there's just a little time, that the big question is, where do we go now? And I see that election protection can only be secured through one path, and that is an amendment to the United States Constitution that will cover the gamut of election reform, get money out of politics, get the electronic trackless voting machines, outlaw them through the Constitution. This can't be done by act or by Congress. It's our vehicle to securing our democracy through the ballot.
Oh, that's
a constitutional amendment.
Good,
you and Harvey can do it. Get it in like 100 words or less, and it's the biggest political dynamite of the early 21st century.
Well, with that, of course, we saw Abraham Lincoln do it in the movie Lincoln on the 13th Amendment.
I haven't seen the movie yet. I just got
go see the movie, and it's a tremendous movie. It shows how the 13th Amendment was passed, and maybe this one. Let's see, this will be, what, the 28th, 29th? thanks for that call, John. We've been with Bob Fitrakis, the principal plaintiff in the Fitrakis versus Houston lawsuit, attorney Cliff Arnebeck here from Columbus, and Sheila Parks in Boston, the Center for Hand Count of Paper Ballots. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening in. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise.